God damn it! My life has value!
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here is a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
And greetings, everybody, to You Have Tread on Me. Today is April 15th, 2012, and I hope y'all are having a fantastic weekend. Obviously, I'm Sleepy Salsa, and I will be guest hosting this particular broadcast tonight, since Randy Mack is otherwise unavailable, but it's okay. We're going to have a little bit, I guess you could say, of an open mic night of sorts. We'll also be covering some other subjects that I think would be of interest to all of you. And if you guys could also let us know in the chat room once you can either hear the music or hear me. Would definitely appreciate it since we are having we're actually training up a new guy. And so this is actually kind of very exciting. A maiden voyage, I guess you could say. Obviously, today is tax day, April 15th. Dum dum da dum dum da dum dum da dum. You will pay your tithe to the state, and which is so. That's what taxation is. Taxation is literally just theft. So to kind of start this off, and I'll post this to you guys in the chat room, but for you guys listening later on the podcast version, there is that blog that's called the economiccollapseblog.com. And the headline that I'm going to read to you folks, just to kind of start off tonight's festivities, is entitled 24 Outrageous Facts About Taxes in the United States That Will Blow Your Mind. The U.S. tax code is a complete and utter abomination, and it needs to be thrown out entirely. Nobody in their right mind would ever read the whole thing. It's over 3 million words long. Each year, Americans spend billions of hours and hundreds of billions of dollars trying to comply with federal tax requirements. Sadly, it is the honest, hardworking Americans in the middle class that always get hit the hardest. The tax code is absolutely riddled with loopholes that big corporations and the ultra-wealthy use to minimize their tax burdens as much as possible. Many poor people do not pay any income taxes at all. The dishonest are rewarded for cheating on their taxes, if they can get away with it. And the ultra wealthy have moved trillions of dollars to offshore tax havens where they can avoid U.S. taxation altogether. Our system is incredibly unfair, really, to the millions of hardworking people in the middle class and upper middle class that drag themselves out of bed and go to work each day and try to do the right thing. In addition, the current U.S. tax system is incredibly inefficient. It diverts a tremendous amount of resources away from more valuable economic activities, and it has chased thousands of businesses and trillions of dollars out of the United States. The U.S. tax code is such a complete and utter mess at this point that it can never be fixed. The only rational thing to do is to abolish it completely. Let me say that one more time. The only rational thing to do is to abolish it completely. Okay? Not making concessions, not reform. No. This is what the guy over at the Economic Collapse blog is saying. The only rational thing to do is to abolish it completely. And any politician that tells you otherwise is lying to you. Uh-huh. So the following are 24 outrageous facts about taxes in the United States that will blow your mind, man. Number one, the U.S. tax code is now 3.8 million words long. If you took all of William Shakespeare's works and collected them together, the entire collection would only be about 900,000 words long. So think about that. you know, The Taming of the Shrew, The Merchant of Venice, the various, you know, King Henry the whatevers, because there's actually been a bunch of them. Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, all the really cool Shakespearean plays, 900,000 words long versus 3.8 million words in the tax code. And oh, by the way, this isn't like, you know, like Renaissance England prose or anything like that. This is like complicated legal jargon right out of the pits of hell. Just saying. Number two, according to the National Taxpayers Union, U.S. taxpayers spend more than 7.6 billion hours complying with federal tax requirements. 7.6 billion hours! That sounds like fun, children, doesn't it? Imagine what our society would look like if all that time was spent on more economically profitable activities. Yeah, like growing food. Number three, 75 years ago, the instructions for Form 1040 were 2 pages long. Today, they are 189 pages long. Wow, isn't that amazing? So the bureaucracy go from 2 pages to 189. That's amazing. Johnny, how did that happen? Oh, wait, oh, there's reasons and, you know, growth of the state and corruption and lots of things and 9/11 and... Lots and lots of reasons, but anyway. Number four, there have been 4,428 changes to the tax code over the last decade. It is incredibly costly to change tax software, tax manuals, and tax instruction booklets for all of those changes. Number five, according to the National Taxpayers Union, the IRS currently has 1,999 different publications, forms, and instruction sheets that you can download from the IRS website. 1,999. That sounds really efficient, doesn't it? Number six, our tax system has become so complicated that it's almost impossible to file your taxes correctly. For example, back in 1998, Money Magazine had 46 different tax professionals complete a tax return for a hypothetical household. All 46 of them came up with a different result. I'm serious, you can't make this shit up. Number seven, in 2009, PC World had 5 of the most popular tax preparation software websites to prepare a tax return for a hypothetical household. All 5 of them came up with a different result. Number eight, the IRS spends $2.45 for every $100 that it collects in taxes. Number nine, according to the Tax Foundation, the average American has to work until April 17th. Just to pay federal, state, and local taxes. Back in 1900, Tax Freedom Day came on January 22nd. So that's more of your wealth gone away, and we haven't even gotten to inflation yet. God, it's just rampant theft. God, these guys are just bastards. And the central bank, too, but anyway. Number 10, when the U.S. government first implemented a personal income tax back in 1913, the vast majority of the population paid a rate of just 1%, and the highest marginal tax rate was just 7%. Number 11, residents of New Jersey pay $1.64 in taxes for every $1 of federal spending that they get back. Let me reread that just one more time so you guys can kind of have that sift through your cranium a little bit. Residents of New Jersey pay $1.64 in taxes for every $1 of federal spending that they get back. Well, here's the $64,000 question. Where is that 64 cents going? Oh, wait, that's right. The federales in the District of Criminals get it. That's what happens. Okay. Yeah, that seems fair, right? You know, consent of the governed? Yeah, well, maybe. Who knows? Well, you guys make up your minds. Anyway, number 12. The United States is the only nation on the planet that tries to tax citizens on what they earn in foreign countries. Yeah, so you go and work over in, like, some bumfuck place like Italy, or, I don't know, some place that's a little bit more civilized like Thailand, I guess. And, yeah, the IRS, you know, so much for that tax haven, right? Yes, please, please, don't steal my stuff. No, if you gotta pay, you know, the bankers, man, because they, you know, they need their dough, you know, because they work so hard, you know, with their fraudulent stuff, and you know, I guess you could say fractional reserve lending on one hand and credit derivatives on the other. You know, those bankers at the, you know, they work so hard because, you know, they work up a sweat printing the green, you know, the Federal Reserve notes. It's such hard labor, and it really adds to the economy. Of course it does. It's so hard. We need to bow down to the bankers and thank them for increasing the productivity of the American workforce and thank them for outsourcing the jobs and all that, because that's what good Americans do. Good Americans practice doublethink, like I just did a minute ago, if you guys caught that. See, that's, as a good American, you are supposed to believe in contradictions. Number 13, according to Forbes, the 400 highest earning Americans pay an average federal income tax rate of just 18%. These guys are bastards. Number 14, Warren Buffett. Oh, quick note. Federal Reserve notes have also been referred to recently as Warren Buffett toilet paper. Just a little bit of trivia. Number 14, Warren Buffett has an effective tax rate of just 17.4% for 2010. Wow, that happened. Oh, I thought it was lobbying. that's right. Oh, okay. So, wait, whatever happened to equality? Where's the equality? I don't see that, or this other notion of equal, of quote unquote equal liberty. But the tax rate for him is different from me, but I don't earn as much, but they steal more of what I make. How does this? Oh, it's a criminal syndicate. Now it makes sense. They just have their, you know, their protection money, their ties that you pay to them, so they don't throw you in a cage as quickly. Number 15, the top 20% of all income earners in the United States pay approximately 86% of all federal income taxes. Top 20% of all income earners pay 86% of all federal income taxes. Huh. So if you're successful financially, that means you get to lose more of your wealth. So technically, the government penalizes you for being financially successful or profitable or whatever. Yep. So at that point, there's no incentive to actually engage in real free market activity of what portion there is left. At that point, you're just going to penalize productivity. But anyway, and genuine productivity is what I'm getting at, not this stupid Chinese New World Order crap that they do, where it's all this protectionist, neo-mercantilist bullcrap. Anyway, number 16, sadly, as Bill Whittle has shown, you could take every single penny that every American earns above $250,000, and it would only fund about 38% of the federal budget. Jeez. Wow. Every single penny that every American above who earns above $250,000 would only fund about 38% of the budget, federal budget. Well, that's what happens when you give a bunch of irresponsible criminal types basically the equivalent of an unlimited credit card line. Because that's exactly what it is. And then the central bank makes it anyway. Number 17, the United States is the highest corporate tax rate in the world, 35%. In Ireland, the corporate tax rate is only 12.5%. Wait, now it makes sense. Land of the coward, home of the slave. That would make sense, right? 35% here in America, the supposedly beautiful. But in Ireland, people who actually fight for their freedom – or at least try to, at least in some cases, it's only 12.5%. Huh, I wonder why. You know, maybe should we actually learn from, like, other people who live in other places about how they fight tyranny. Man, I don't know, I'm just saying. This is causing thousands of corporations to move operations out of the United States and into other countries. Number 18, some tax havens are doing a booming business and setting up sham headquarters for U.S. corporations. For example, the city of Zug, Switzerland, only has a population of 26,000 people, but it is the headquarters for 30,000 companies. Number 19, in 1950, corporate taxes accounted for about 30% of all federal revenue. In 2012, corporate taxes will account for less than 7% of all federal revenue. Gee whiz. I mean, that's amazing. So, and that's kind of the other thing, too. I remember the anti-terrorist, and for those of you guys who don't know, the anti-terrorist, he's the British chap on YouTube with the ski mask and sunglasses. You know, the really cool guy. Yeah, I mean, even he's mentioned about how corporate taxation works and basically what happens. The short version is that corporations just basically pass the cost of additional taxes the government levies on them to consumers and employees and that kind of thing, those kind of folks. So, you know, corporate taxation doesn't solve anything. So any of the supposed hippie slash Occupy Wall Street slash whatever people that say, oh, we just need to tax corporations more. No, they'll just pass the cost on. They've always done. They have a very long history of doing that. Here's more proof. So you go from 1950, where corporate taxation goes for 30% of all federal revenue, and this year it's now less than 7% of federal revenue. To go from 30% to less than 7%, that's like a drop of like over 20%. Oh my gosh, I just did math. I knew it was less over than 20%. Sorry, some people have been coming across can't do some basic math. It's kind of sad. Then again, what can you expect with the public pool system, right? Number 20. In a previous article, the guy who writes economiccollapseblog.com discussed how many of the largest corporations make huge profits and yet pay less than nothing in taxes. And he basically has this huge list. And so if you guys go to the article, which is titled 24 Outrageous Facts About Taxes in the United States That Will Blow Your Mind, and I'll post to the guys in the chat room as well. But if you guys listening later on the podcast version, you know, you'll see stuff like Wells Fargo gets $49.37 billion in profits, but only has to pay $681 million in taxes. You'll see stuff like that, and just like happening that over and over and over again. Number 21, ExxonMobil paid $15 billion in taxes in 2009, but not a single penny went to the U.S. government. Wow, I wonder where the taxes went. Number 22, many wealthy Americans hid enormous amounts of money outside the country in order to avoid paying taxes. According to the IMF, that's the International Monetary Fund for you, those of you guys who didn't listen to the Austerity in You episode, which is available in the YHTM archives. A total of $18 trillion is currently being hidden in offshore banks. $18 trillion hidden in offshore banks. Uh-huh. Of course, that's the IMF, and you know they're part of the enemy. So, I mean, maybe they're telling the truth. Who knows? Number 23, the number of traffic accidents spikes each year around April 15th. The following is from a recent Bloomberg article. Quote, deaths from traffic accidents around April 15th, traditionally the last day to file individual income taxes in the United States, rose 6% on average on each of the last 30 years of tax filing days compared with the day during the week prior and a week later, according to research published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. End quote. Well, I have to say, just from a kind of common sense perspective, I think some folks are, you know, trying to rush around a little too much, trying to get those. But, they treat us just like tax cattle. They really do. And finally, number 24. Most of the tax debate is focused on income taxes, but the truth is that Americans pay dozens of other taxes every single year. The following are just a few of the taxes that many Americans pay. And it's like 40 different things, but I'll just mention like a few. Gift taxes, federal unemployment taxes, ironically. Pay them taxes because you're unemployed because you can't get a job because they're putting the country into austerity, right? Oh, and the bailouts, don't forget that. The telephone minimum usage surcharge taxes and a bunch of other stuff. So I'm going to skip a lot of that. So when you account for all forms of taxation on the federal, state, or local levels, there are many Americans that pay out more than half of their incomes in taxes. We are being taxed into oblivion, and yet most Americans do not even realize that this is happening. It is kind of like being killed by thousands of tiny cuts. Now, it's true. So what do all these taxes buy us? They buy us a massively bloated government that wastes money on some of the craziest things imaginable. Millions of Americans work for the federal government, yet most of them produce very little of real economic value. The following comes from a recent National Review article. Quote, by 2005, the federal government employed 14.6 million people, 1.9 million civil servants, 770,000 postal workers, 1.44 million uniformed service personnel, 7.6 million contractors, and 2.9 million grantees. This amounted to a ratio of 5.5 shadow government employees for every civil servant on the federal payroll. Since 1999, the government has grown by over 4.5 million employees. 4.5 million, huh? That's 4.5 million people who are more than happy to engage in to support taxation because that's how they get paid. According to the same article, when you add in state and local government workers, the numbers are even more dramatic. Quote, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are 3.8 million full-time and 1.5 million part-time employees on state payrolls. Local governments add a further 11 million full-time and 3.2 million part-time personnel. This means that state and local governments combined employ 19.5 million Americans. Guys, there's only like 300 million Americans or whatever the current population count is last time I checked. It's just – so yes, we do need some government. For example, without any law enforcement at all, our society would descend into complete chaos. Without any military at all, we would be completely open to foreign conquest. Well, obviously that's a minarchist talking, but I'll kind of leave that be. In order to have a stable, secure society, we do need some government. Well, depends on your definition of society, doesn't it? But anyway, however, we definitely do not need the massively bloated government that we have today.
Right.
That much is observable. The truth is that most government employees are a drain on the system. Most of them just push paper around. I used to work, the guy who is writing for the Economic Collapse blog used to work in Washington, D.C., so he knows what pushing paper around is all about. Well, that's interesting. I never knew that about him before. And as you wrote about yesterday, there are millions of other Americans that enjoy a comfortable existence at the expense of the federal government without doing any work whatsoever. It's called welfare, or a type of welfare, I guess you could say. Of course, the biggest welfare recipients are all of the big corporations. All forms of corporate welfare should be eliminated immediately. No kidding. So when are U.S. taxpayers going to get sick and tired of paying for all of this? Every single year, the federal government, state governments, and local governments drain massive amounts of desperately needed money from hard-working middle-class families. Then they take that money and spend it on incredibly foolish things. When are American voters going to stand up and boldly declare that they have been taxed enough already? T, I guess you could say. And they aren't going to take it anymore. The current tax code is completely and utterly broken, and it's beyond repair. Unfortunately, neither Republicans or the Democrats are proposing that we should get rid of it. Well, of course not. The left-right paradigm in action. So we're just going to go. So we are just going to continue to get more of the same year after year, and it is the middle class that will feel the pain, right? As well as folks that are more working class types. And again, I'll repost this to the chat room right now, but that was the Economic Collapse blog article entitled 24 Outrageous Facts About Taxes in the United States That Will Blow Your Mind. And so, well, let's think about that for a second. So taxes, right? Okay, so does anybody have a higher claim on your life than you do? Just a thought. All right, now obviously I don't want to be yakking this entire time because, well, that would just hurt my throat and it would just be kind of silly just hearing me yakking this entire time. So if he doesn't mind, I'd like to bring on, I guess you could say, our guest for this evening.
Hello.
Hey, voice. How you doing, man?
What's up, bud? How you doing?
Doing quite well. Tonight is an exciting night, isn't it?
It is so exciting. It is. It's tax day. Everybody's going to pay the taxes.
So, voice, what do you think about this whole thingy called taxation? I mean, do we really need it?
Yes and no. We kind of need it just to run our government, but at the same time, it's just completely outrageous. Every year something changes in the tax code, and one more page gets added, you know, one more paragraph that changes the first paragraph in the 800th page. It's a little much.
Oh, of course. And, I mean, any one of those figures I was just rattling off is just really quite atrocious. I mean, it's not even so much that it's, like, evil and bad, which it is. It's also the fact that just conceptually, it's literally just hard to understand. Like, how do you have so much, such bloated federal budget that even if you were to steal every single penny from people that earn more than $250,000, that would only pay for 30-some-odd% of the federal budget? How does that happen?
It's because we're borrowing so much money from everyone else just to run our basic needs. Of our country, of our government, quote unquote needs is what they call needs. Things we really don't need.
Right. And so it's just like, wow. So, but anyway, I hope you guys have had fun filing your income tax returns or not filing it, as the case may be, because last time I checked, there was no law. But
I love how it's completely voluntary, but if you don't do it, you'll go to jail.
You know, I love that one Jan Helfield interview that he did with Harry Reid, and Jan Helfield was trying to get just a very – it's up – and guys in chat room, it's up on YouTube somewhere. Just type in like Jan Helfield Harry Reid or some or search term similar to that. And also for the people listening on the podcast version later, you know, do the same thing. But in that interview, which was pretty short, just Harry Reid's a dick, what I found interesting was that when it came to the issue of when Jan Hanfel was just very simply and, you know, logically asking, like, okay, look, is filing federal income taxes voluntary or not? And it was, like, impossible to get Harry Reid to, like, give a straight answer. And basically, after kind of going back and forth, like, and Helfi was doing a good job, I think Reid admitted something to the effect of, well, it's voluntary, but if you don't file it, we're going to send men with guns to come harm you and your family and, you know, throw you in jail, seize your assets and all this stuff. So it's like, okay, so obviously the guy has, like, a major, like, brain fart when it comes to exactly what is coercive and what's voluntary. I mean, it just kind of goes without saying. I mean, my goodness. I mean, if filing federal income taxes, and let's just brainstorm this for a second, just rationally, just a little bit. If it was voluntary, I don't think anybody would be paying, or very little, or very few people would be paying.
I wouldn't be paying.
Right. Well, and yeah. Well, anybody without any money would sure as hell not be paying, because you would be spending that on stuff for yourself, your family, etc.
Yeah.
Would you want to buy another pair of shoes for your kid because his shoes are got holes in them, or would you want to pay the feds to go be a bunch of tyrannical fuck ups? Yeah. Just saying. Just saying. Just keep that in mind.
What?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, wow. And then it turns out that what Harry Mead went, what he meant was, oh, when you like file the when you do the self-reporting thingy or whatever, that is voluntary. That's what they call voluntary compliance. But the point is, you still have to file. It's like, so I mean, Harry Reid was very much engaging in Orwellian doublethink. So it's like, can I get a so Helfield was like, can I get a straight answer out of you? It's like, no.
Maybe.
I mean, if you, how about this? Can you get a straight answer out of any agent of the state?
No. What is it? Ben Bernanke, the guy that runs the Fed? Is that his name?
Yeah, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke.
Yeah. Who was it? Was it Ron Paul that asked him if gold was money, and he said no?
He said yes, actually.
But at first he said no. At first he said no, right?
Right, exactly.
It's kind of the same thing. Like, well, no, not technically, but yeah, we still buy it. But wait, is it money or not? Is it worth anything or not? You just said no, but then you say you're buying it. So is it yes or no? Which one is it?
Give me a straight answer, damn it.
I want a real answer. Don't walk me around in circles here. Come on now, quit chasing your tail. Give me an answer.
You know, what Ben Bernanke should have done was just stand up and look absolutely crazy and kind of do that one movie line. You can't handle the truth. The truth can handle you. I sincerely doubt your truth-handling abilities, Ron Paul. Okay, that's a little bit butchered, but...
Can't handle the truth. You don't need to know the truth. The American people are too stupid to understand the truth. Oh, social engineering. What?
Oh my gosh, it's so sad, man. It's really, really just pretty terrible. I mean, again, I mean, like one of the things that Ron Paul is exceptionally good at is during those committee hearings or what have you, he is excellent at making Ben Bernanke look like a total tool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. I mean, the good doctor doesn't do anything particularly sophisticated. He just like asks like, you know, fairly basic common sense questions that Bernanke's flubbering about in that typical, you know, ex-professor way of his. And
could you imagine what's going through his mind every time Ron Paul gets on mic? I bet you he's like, oh shit, what's he gonna ask me today? Like, oh my god, why is this old guy bothering me? What the hell?
I just want to be a tyrant and steal from people.
What's all the money in the world, okay? Is it that hard to ask? Can I just ask for all the money? And just shut up, quit asking questions.
I'm just the head of the... I'm just the chairman of the local branch of the international banking cartel. This job was supposed to be easy. That's what the Rothschild family told me.
So what do you think about me having to be in front of the press and on TV and answering difficult questions?
I mean, next thing you're going to ask me questions about something hard like 9/11 or something else. It's just
quantitative easing. I don't even know what that means.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That just means more inflation. See, that's the other thing, too, is that the system will actually they have their own thing called Newspeak, where they literally just conjure out these bureaucratic nonsense stuff just out of thin air, like just comes out of nowhere. And, you know, there's actually that really good video that's on YouTube. Guys in the chat, if you could post this, that'd be good. And then for you guys listening on the podcast version later, go to YouTube, type in quantitative easing explained. And it's like this extra normal cartoon where it's a really good dialogue back and forth between the two characters where they basically make, you know, the bad guys, the feds and the Fed. Oh, that's not getting confusing at all, is it? So the Federales and the central bank look like total douchebags, basically. So, and it's incredibly well-deserved. I mean, Ben Bernanke even admitted that, the Federal Reserve, you know, we were responsible for the Great Depression, and we're sorry. I mean, did anybody, like, remember that? Because I remember when I found out about that, I could hear a pin drop. It was just like... So you guys admitted that you guys pretty much more or less caused the Great Depression, which was kind of something we already knew. But now you're admitting it and acting like it's no big deal, and you're apologizing as if that's going to make it better?
Just don't get it.
I just like... I'm sorry, what?
Huh?
Huh?
Huh? What?
Okay, how
one
many,
more time.
Okay.
Say that again. What?
Huh? Okay, let's think about this for like 2 seconds. How many people die? I'm not talking about people that were homeless or children that became orphans. Just body count. How many people died because of the Great Depression? Does anybody remember? And guys in the chat, if you could give me a figure or something. How many millions of people was it again? It was a lot, whatever it was. I don't remember right this second, but if somebody could post it, I could put it in the – I can verbally say and put it in the podcast version. But it was a lot of people.
A lot of them killed themselves, too, on top of it. It wasn't just a lot of people, like, starved and died and shit like that. It was more of, oh, God, I've lost all my money. Death. People jumping off buildings, people drowning themselves, burning their houses down. Crazy, crazy shit happened back then.
Yeah, and it's not at all surprising. I mean, consider this, that money is the lifeblood of the economy. If you corrupt the money, you corrupt the people. And, you know, look what happened. I mean, basically in 29, you have a bunch of, margin calls for those margin loans, and that plus a few other things happening at the time. And the next thing you know, like, people are bankrupt, like, automatically. You know, not cool. And so, I mean, and that's the other thing. You know, part of me wonders how tax day even got started. In one sense, you know, it's almost like the establishment was trying to make a joke of sorts that, oh, we're going to have this on the 15th because we know the 19th is like your guys' day. You know, it's like, yeah, so just to kind of, you know, not only stick that knife in, but twist a little bit, you know, we're going to have our tax day right before Patriots Day on April 19th because of Lexington and Concord. Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and now this is going off on a slight tangent, but, you know, there was also it was also brought to my attention a little while ago that there was this Walmart in this one random place that had this display up, and they were trying to portray 9/11 as if it was Patriots Day. And I got to admit, that really kind of grinded my gears. I mean, 9/11 is not something to be, you know, big flag-waving event. It's not supposed to be that. It wasn't exactly a happy thing, let's put it that way. If we're going to do the flag-waving thing, we should do it on something that was happy. July 4th is a good example. You know, basically, fuck you, British Crown, and particularly the Parliament. That's, you know, writing your John Hancock on the document. Okay. And I would say the other one would be April 19th.
Freedom.
But wait a minute. Isn't wasn't shooting at redcoats illegal?
What?
Shooting at redcoats was, I'm pretty certain shooting at the redcoats on in 1775, I'm pretty certain it was illegal.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that wasn't supposed to happen, but the king wasn't around anyway, so it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, he was across the ocean. We can't talk about our past history and you know, what was good and what we did right, you know, because none of that applies today. Just forget, you know. Go back to watching American Idol.
Right, right. It's illegal. We can't broach any of that. We can't learn how to, you know, engage in self-defense and learn how to, you know, handle violence because there are criminal types running around the place. Some of them starting this crap, other ones that are more street-level guys feeding off of it. Kind of like that other article where the guy who runs Economic Collapse blog reported on guys, like a small crew of street-level criminals that were, like, ripping out ATMs with, like, forklifts or whatever. You know, it's just like, oh, but we can't, you know, we can't talk about, like, history or anything like that because it's illegal. Like, what does that mean anyway? I mean, y'all know that a bunch of criminals run the government and that the various 50 state governments, a lot of them are cowards. I mean, look, just look what happened here in Texas not that long ago with the threatened air embargo. Okay, guys, when you have an embargo, just for the guys that don't understand history, whenever you have an embargo, that is known as an act of war. You don't do that unless you want to, you know, throw down the gauntlet and you want to go at it in terms of, like, nation states or whatever. So the federales in the District of Criminals threatened an air embargo over Texas, of all places. Over Texas. If the Texas state legislature had done the right, it actually went ahead and did the right thing and threw the TSA out of all Texas airports. And obviously what happened was that the legislature was cowardly and, you know, they acquiesced and they kept the TSA in. And so it's like, wow. And that's Texas. I mean, consider, I mean, look at the history of Texas. I mean, 1835, the Texas Revolution. You know, Santa Ana, and that was the funny thing, like, Santa Ana violated the Mexican Constitution of 1824 and, you know, dissolved the Congress and all did all sorts of other unconstitutional stuff. Next thing you know, Santa Ana marches into Zacatecas, which was a nearby state that was next to Tejas e Coahuila, because at that time Texas and Coahuila were actually the same state. So they march into Zacatecas and kill everybody, including the militia there. Yes, Zacatecas had its own militia, and they go in and just kill everybody. And then, you know, later on you have the – actually, there were several battles at the Alamo, actually. You know, it's just like, my God. So a lot of this has to do with a lot of, you know, violating the Constitution over again. And that was, you know – yeah, that was like, you know, 1835 and 36. It's just like, and, you know, the federales are doing it now and have been for many years. And now, and a couple months ago or whatever, they threatened an air embargo over Texas. I know I'm kind of, it's just like, that's kind of the big deal, okay? That is an act of war. I can't stress that enough. So I'm just saying, guys, you know, consider the enemy, consider who they work for, consider what they've done. I mean, you don't even need to get into other things like 9/11 or Waco, the vast murder that happened there. Or, I mean, like, any one of these things is, like, beyond atrocious. And look at what the mainline public does. They file their taxes. Well, guess where that tax money goes to support? You know, the adventures abroad in Afghanistan, Iraq, and... You know, hey, voice, how many wars are going on right now?
It depends. You include the war on Al-Qaeda and terrorism?
Well, that doesn't really count. I'm saying, like, in countries, like, actual physical places that exist.
Oh, right now? Across the world?
Okay, no. I mean the ones that, you know, the criminal criminal American government is in.
Too many.
Right, okay, so let's try and count it, okay? We've got Afghanistan, we've got Iraq.
Libya. There,
right, that's three. There's also been various attacks on and off in Pakistan. There's always been the saber-rattling...
Saudi Arabia.
Well, okay, I...
Soon to be Saudi Arabia. That's going to happen.
Right, right, of course. There's been the saber rattling for a year, for at least a decade now almost, with Iran. And now the globalists want to try and take out Syria. So that's like, what, 5, 6, 7? Is anybody even keeping count anymore? That stuff doesn't pay for itself, guys. So you pay your taxes. Consider where that's going.
Well, you know what else is crazy, though, speaking of wars? When was the last time one was actually declared?
I think it was, like, World War II or some such thing. But, like, since then, like, I mean, like, nothing. Not Vietnam, not Korea, not Persian Gulf War 1 or 2, for that matter. None of the other tiny little military ops that they do in various places. And that's even that was even before 9/11. I mean, look, here's the problem. Congress ceded its powers to, to declare war to the executive branch, which is unconstitutional to them, and they're a bunch of bastards. So, again, consider who they work for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, tax day. So, basically, we're all forced at the point of a gun. And by gun, I mean the libertarian sense of the coercive power of the state. That is, the willingness of the state to initiate an act of violence against you and your family personally, and everyone else's family personally, or so they do it selectively, or however you want to think of that as. Tax day is basically we are forced at the point of a gun to support financially all this horrible shit that they do, whatever it all is. And the list of grievances is like, you could paper the entire country with grievances from coast to coast. Not that hard. I mean, it's like thousands and thousands of miles worth of grievances. Some of it's trivial, but a lot of it's pretty important. And obviously, you could summarize most of that in the Under One Banner You Have Tread on Me petition, obviously. But yeah, this is just wrong, man. And so if there's any way that we can try and either get tax deductions or not have any tax liabilities or anything like that, even if only one of you guys tonight, one of you guys listening tonight as of next tax year, financial fiscal year, if one of you guys manages to not pay taxes at all and figure out a way to do that and hopefully keep yourself safe while doing it, that is one less individual that is forced at the barrel of a gun or the point of a gun to support the state. And all of the crap that they do with abusing our liberties and everything else, as well as killing foreigners in, some sandy place or whatever. I mean, it's all wrong. I don't want them to kill a bunch of foreigners. I would prefer that we could actually, trade. And not this crappy NAFTA stuff. I mean, I'm talking about, like the real, legitimate type of free marketplace type of trade. Because that way, I mean, you can actually build up countries that way by building up wealth. I mean, if people trade, then they can actually have then they both benefit mutually, because otherwise they wouldn't do it. Wealth is created through trade, actually. The problem is that then the establishment lies and says, oh, well, we're going to have this thing called free trade, but it's not really free trade. It's basically this protectionist, neo-mercantilist, corporatist, asswipe thing, where the government gives us, meaning the oligopolies, corporations, and various others, protections. And we can jack up prices and do a whole bunch of other things. Basically, we're allowed to cheat legally. We're allowed to cheat, and the state gives us protection, so we can screw everyone else. It's like, that's not free market at all. So, I mean, that's another thing of newspeak, is then you say free trade. Well, what are you talking about? Are you talking about, the establishment version of free trade, which isn't free trade? It's not free, and it's not really trading? Or are you talking about, the real free market activity, where I exchange my hammer for your shoe or something? And that's kind of a problem. So, again, I mean, if you guys want to... And, here's the problem. I understand some people where they have the concerns about, well, I pay my taxes because I don't want to have my assets seized, more of them seized, I should say, because you're already getting some of them seized anyway through taxation itself. I don't want to have more of my assets seized. I don't want to be thrown in prison, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand that. And But I'm just saying that, okay, yeah, you are being robbed at the point of a gun, just like, you know, with a, you know, like a mugger mugging you out of $5 or whatever you have in the Warren Buffett toilet paper FRNs. Okay. Here's the thing, though. Are you just going to just, you know, just let it be and, you know, well, if the mugger is going to mug me, that's just it? Or are you going to take proactive measures to make sure that, or to try and make it hard for the muggers to rob you? Maybe you shouldn't walk down that dark alley, like, after 11 p.m. in that bad neighborhood.
That would be smart. You shouldn't just go in that bad neighborhood at all at night.
Right. Or maybe you should, you know, carry. Or maybe you should learn how to do a, you know, gun disarm.
Wait, hold on. Carry a gun. Now, see, there's the problem also. There's so many regulations against that that a lot of people aren't going to go and do it because you got to have a permit here. Certain states have this law, blah, 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 so forth and so on. There's way too many laws behind that, and people just don't do it. There are also people who are deathly afraid of guns. Oh, Lord. Oh, no. Guns kill people.
Right.
Guns don't kill people. It's the person behind the gun that kills people. Gun's not just going to go off sitting there and kill someone.
Right. And then you see that's, you know, that's the other problem too is, but I'm using that as a analogy. I mean, maybe what you need to do is figure out ways to make sure that you don't have to pay federal income taxes, and some people have been able to make a go of it. You know, maybe that should be an avenue of investigation for a lot of you guys. And again, in the chat room, like Gary Hunt says, well over half of those 300 million Americans rely upon the government for their primary source of income. Yeah, and I also mentioned that a little bit earlier with those figures from that Economic Collapse blog article. It's, yeah, you know, all of those government workers, I mean, you might as well consider them on welfare. And in some ways, some of them are on a literal form of welfare because they don't even do any work, like even like pushing paper. So, and that's the thing. I mean, you got to remove incentives. So really one of the best ways to take down the state is to have people gradually over time in greater and greater numbers just quit their government jobs and try and actually do real work in the free market. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done, and technically that would be a broadcast topic by itself. But, you know, that's one thing that should be explored, is to see if that could work. You know, just saying. And, yeah, it's just so atrocious. It's so atrocious, the whole thing. You know, Voice, what do you think about this whole thing of of this system of taxation that we're subjected to and how the system deliberately engineered in such a way where so much of the where such a huge percentage of the population would be dependent on those taxes for their income, that whenever somebody comes forward to try and either get rid of taxes or whatever the case is, they vehemently defend it.
Here's the problem. We've got all these, what do you want to call them? Not incentives, but what's the word? The handouts. I can't think of the word right now. I'm drawing a blank. Welfare and food stamps. What is that called? Anyway, we have those programs. Entitlements.
Subsidies or?
Entitlements.
Oh, yeah.
Entitlements. We have all these entitlement programs. And all of these entitlement programs run off of taxes. So as soon as you say, oh, I'm going to turn around and get rid of taxes or try to reduce taxes so that way the government is back to what it is supposed to be, you know, small, you know, out of everyone's business, you know, it's not supposed to be a big money-making machine, okay? And that's why people will stand up and defend it and be like, oh, no, this, that, you know, blah, 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 because they're lazy and they don't want to work. They found a good way to live their life without having to work and still have all their bills paid for because they hold the government's hand.
Right, and it's kind of funny, too, because, you know, last night I did my normal podcast, and the subject matter was about survivalism, just the basics of it and that sort of thing. And one of the big themes that was mentioned was about being a survivalist is very much about self-sufficiency. And what's interesting is that a lot of the folks that are on welfare or whatever – you can't say they're self-sufficient at all. Not even close. So, you know, that's kind of a problem, is that it used to be an American virtue to be self-sufficient and to take care of yourself. And after you get your own household in order, so to speak, you then try and become more of an adult, a proper, responsible adult, and you take care of others. But apparently, you know, can't make that happen. Nope. It's basically this system of dependency and all this kind of horrid, horrid crap. And, you know, let's get a little bit into that, too. You know, I mentioned a moment ago about, you know, if you're a government employee, if you're an agent of the state, meaning if you're a judge, a legislator, a bureaucrat, even a police officer, just quit your job. Do go find some other work. See if there's any skills that you already have that easily translate, but go work in the remnants of the free market. Might as well. It's your best chance for, you know, living with yourself and being morally consistent. Just saying. I mean, the state is an agency of violence, and quite frankly, we don't even have the night watchman state anymore, which is the republic. There's a reason there's the phrase about restore the republic, because we don't have one right now. Basically, the American government is a republican name only. A rhino, if you will. I mean, what we have is this corporatist empire type situation. And it's getting kind of crazy. And then, see, there's the other thing, too, voice. And this is something that, you know, a lot of the so-called patriot broadcasters, God, I don't like that term, you know, they don't really get into is, of course, the North American Union. Here's the funny thing. If you're going to be a nationalist, a patriot, if you will, cool, great, that's awesome. But you should really know about the North American Union, because that's kind of like a big deal. And, you know, it was George Bush, Vicente Fox, and Paul Martin, literally the presidents of here, Mexico, and then Canada's prime minister, that not that many years ago basically signed the Security, Prosperity, and Partnership Agreement, which was another incremental step towards integrating Canada, Mexico, and this place into basically a North American version of the European Union, basically a super state. Oh, by the way, once that happens, your nation state, America, if you will, doesn't exist. The Constitution can't protect you. And not only the federal constitution, even your state constitutions can't protect you either. So, you know, if you're going to get all upset about, you know, guys trying to take over the country or whatever, you should really hit on the North American Union. I mean, Judicial Watch released those documents of the SPP a while back, and unfortunately they're not available anymore for some strange reason. You know, somebody should really get those documents back up for those of you that actually are diligent about archiving. But that's kind of a big deal. I mean, again, not to toot my horn about Texas, but one of the big things here in Texas was they were, again, one of those kind of corollary projects to help bring in the NAU was the Trans-Texas Corridor, which was also affectionately referred to as the NAFTA Superhighway. Now, last time I checked, they mainly killed it. The legislature mainly killed it, but it's technically still on the books. And it hasn't been removed as of yet. So, you know, Voice, what do you think about that? You know, basically a bunch of globalist scumfucks literally gathering together in secret, the press not covering the fact that they're signing these treaties, totally violating each of their own respective nation states' constitutions or whatever, and trying to basically bring about a North American version of the European Union.
It's bad, because first off, a lot of the people, well, there are a few people, I can't say a lot, few people that are in our own government were involved with these meetings, and there's no media or anything like that. Well, when there's meetings like that, everyone in our government is supposed to know about it, you know what I mean? And everyone's supposed to attend to it, you know, or at least have a representative, like a PR person, represent these meetings. Well, they keep happening year by year, every year, you know, once or twice a year, and they decide what they're going to do, and it's wrong. Not only is it illegal for our country, but I'm pretty sure it's illegal for other countries. And, you know, we were never really meant to be some North American Union. You know, we were meant to be our own free country.
Yeah, it's just, oh, God. And here's the funny thing. You know, it's not necessarily bad for nation states to merge together or to secede and break up and to form different countries or whatever the case is. The problem here, historically speaking, the problem here is that this is all being done very quietly and without the consent of the governed. So, you know, I mean, even if, I mean, for those of you guys that do want the republic back and who do believe in the social contract and consent of the governed and all that, great. Here's the problem, though. Where the hell is your consent to be governed if they eradicate the United States and merge it into a super state, ALA like the European Union? Did you consent to that?
No.
I don't think anybody listening would pretty much, yeah, no. And I haven't even gotten to the fun part with how they're going to try and, you know, centralize the banks with having the common currency called the Amero. So they're even going to try and get rid of the FRNs and replace it with something even worse. There's actually been white papers written on this. Guys, go do an internet search for, I believe it was called The Case for the Amero. And it's just, oh, goodness sakes, man. I mean, it's just bad. And here's the question, you know, if you are a patriot type, do you want to not have America anymore and instead have a European Union version?
Can America? Can America? That's pretty much what it would be. Canada, America, and Mexico. Can America?
Kind of like Can America. That's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really want that? I mean, you know, I mean, if you want it, then cool, you can go off and be a good little global citizen or whatever. Citizen of the world, I think, is the other term for it, and you can acquiesce to everything that the CFR and the Bilderberg Group and all the other bunch of scum fucks want to do. But if not, then you should be really upset about the North American Union. Now, as far as the – everybody knows how I do the problem-solving side of it. You know, at this time, I really don't see what can be done about it directly, but I would humbly suggest maybe the whole, you know, committees of safety thing as a good option, at least as a starting point, just saying. But yeah, it's just, it's really, really, really horrid. And, I mean, it's a funny thing, actually, speaking about the Bilderberg Group real quickly, you know, again, that's another example of a bunch of guys gathering in secret to basically, and that's the thing too, any of these organizations or semi-public things or whatever, is basically a bunch of wannabe plutocratic technocrats who relish playing God, and they gather together and have secret meetings in order to plot and plan things. And then those plans that they plotted are carried out successfully and implemented. There's actually a history of this. And so It's kind of like, okay, why can't the good guys just go have meetings locally where they are and have their own plans? Now, yes, there are now obviously there is the plan for the restoration of constitutional government. Great plan, by the way. What I'm saying is that, you know, why not have more? Let's have a little bit of competition, I guess you could say, a little bit of free market in the free marketplace of ideas, you know, competition. I don't see any reason why not. But that's the thing, though. I mean, it's almost like every time several activists try to put together some sort of quote-unquote plan, they don't really do it. Like, for example, Voice, do you remember when Anonymous had the plan?
Yes.
Okay, and you remember what happened?
Yes.
Well, how about you tell the nice folks what exactly happened with Anonymous's The Plan, Three Phases, 1 Year, A World of Change, as the slogan went.
That started... It started at the end of last year, the last quarter of last year. What ended up happening was the first original part of the plan, it was Part 3's plan. No one really knew what Part 1 or Part 2 and 3 was because nobody in Anonymous released it. Part 1 was to be self-sufficient, to break away from the system, to, you know, figure out how to basically get off the grid. Which, you know, makes sense. You know, that's possible for everyone to do that. Now, you still have to deal with our fiat currency that we have, but it's possible to get off the grid. Yes, it costs money, but in the long term, you can do it. So that was Part 1. What ended up happening is there was a lot of infighting and discussion between different members, and they ended up splitting into multiple different groups.
And it just fell apart. And you would ask people, like I've asked people, okay, so what's plan two and three? What's going on? They said, oh, well, we don't really know yet. We haven't figured it out yet. Like, well, wait a minute. How are you going to have a plan that you're presenting to everybody, but you don't really know what it is?
Yeah, that's completely moronic. And so you have these guys who probably are just well-intentioned, useful idiot types that are trying to kind of – but that's the thing, though. They're acting that way, but they want to tackle – and some of them said this explicitly. They want to tackle guys who, for a living, have secret meetings and plan stuff that then are implemented by their various cohorts in various ways.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, dude, that's like putting a adolescent teenage girl in the ring with a professional MMA or UFC fighter and expecting her to knock him out.
Or that's like Obama saying, we're going to cut $1 trillion off the debt over the next 10 years. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. That's kind of hard to do when we're borrowing, what is it, I think $1.5 billion a day. So your $1 trillion that you're cutting off the national debt that's actually $15-plus trillion now, not to include everything we owe back to the Federal Reserve and everything else we owe to China and everything else. Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I got to admit, man, it's just, it's really just atrocious, the whole thing is. And then, of course, you know, then nobody wants to organize, or almost nobody. And even when you are able to organize, it's pretty much following more like an LR kind of situation for the most part. Now, if something can be more organized, whether it's a COS or something akin to that kind of level, then cool. You know, that's what needs to be done. But, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I actually, like, know my neighbors, okay? These guys aren't even – they're not even attempting to see through the fog. They're just like, but the greatest problem in the world is greed. No, the great problem in the world, if you are to pick one, is the willingness of human beings to initiate the use of violence against others. And the globalists are the same way. They basically have seized control of the state here in America to the point where they basically use that as a bludgeon against not only their political opponents, but everyone else. That's kind of like a big problem. So you have both this social institution that maintains a monopoly on the use of coercive force, which is bad enough by itself, which is why you need to at least limit it, at least. But then on top of it, you have these, you know, horrid despotic special interest types that then have successfully seized such amazing control over the state to such the point where they use it as a bludgeon, which is why the list of grievances stretches from coast to coast. I mean, and that's the funny thing, too. I mean, you know, you read in, like, political science textbooks about how America is supposed to basically be – it's supposed to have – under federalism, right? It's not supposed to be a confederacy, and it's not supposed to be – a unitary power structure, supposed to be a federalist one.
Supposed to be a republic.
Yes, it is that too. The distinction, though, between a unitary confederacy and federalism is the issue about sovereignty and how that's distributed. With a unitary system, which is what we have in practice, you have a central government that dictates to basically what are provinces. And the point is that the 50 states are basically nothing more than 50 provinces at the stage of the game, considering federal subsidies and everything else. Congress using power of the purse and whatnot to bludgeon the states into doing, you know, what they want. So we don't really have federalism. And then, of course, you can consider the Civil War amendments. That really kind of got rid of the rest of federalism in a lot of ways. And, you know, that's just what happened. Now a confederacy would be kind of more arguable, like the original 13 colonies, originally. I mean, Articles of Confederation says it right there. So you don't have a central – it's basically the opposite of a unitary system. You don't have a central government dictating. You do have a slight central government, but it's really weak and kind of wimpy and can't do much of anything. The states have the primary – the states have their real sovereignty and whatever. Federalism was supposed to be the balance between a unitary power disparity, I guess you could say, and confederacy, where you have it's the notion of you have like dual sovereignty, also known as dual federalism. The central government has its sovereignty, and the 50 states have theirs too, more or less. And unfortunately, without that balance, look what happened. We're now under a unitary type structure. It's the District of Criminals runs everything. Like, for example, Voice, how about this? When was the last time, like, the mainline public, like where you live, gave a flying fuck about what your state legislature does?
When was the last time that anybody in my area cared?
Yeah. Or do they care more about what the U.S. Congress is doing?
They care. Okay, in our local area, it's not so much as we're focused on districts where I live in. I'm pretty involved with our government around this area because I have family that goes to, you know, the government. We want to call it the meetings that they have: the Republican meeting, the Democrat meeting, and the Tea Party meeting. I have friends that go. So I'm getting a lot of stuff back from them. As a whole, our community is pretty involved here, at least in my district. The last time the whole state got involved with something, I don't know. I can't remember the last time the state got real upset about something, other than the whole birth control thing that happened recently. Other than that, I don't know. I can't remember the last time.
Yeah. And that's kind of my point, too. I mean, same thing here in Texas. It's all about what the feds are doing and all this stuff. Well, what about this? I mean, look, if you're going to be a constitutionalist, you should also, by default, also be like a states' rights advocate or whatever. Again, 10th Amendment. So if you're a constitutionalist, you should actually care more about your own state's respective state's constitution than the federal one, actually. See, it's funny, you know, your run-of-the-mill constitutionalist you run across will wax eloquent about the federal constitution until the cows come home. They'll cite from memory the Fourth Amendment and, you know, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, like, from rote memory. But then it's like, great, so what does your respective state constitution say? This is all about, well, I've never looked at that. But you're a constitutionalist, right? It's kind of a problem, right?
Right.
And you see, in a lot of ways, some state constitutions, some provisions in certain areas are actually better than the federal one. For example, here in Texas, habeas corpus can't ever be suspended, ever. That's, like, really awesome, like, provided the Texas state government did the right thing. But assuming they did follow their own rules and whatnot, which apparently for some people is really hard to do, and you know who you are. Habeas corpus can never be, at least in Texas matters. So it's just like, whoa, that's cool. So the Bill of Rights in the federal constitution is not the be all and end all. Yeah, no, it's not. And granted, it depends which, you know, Bill of Rights in whatever state constitution you're looking at. And they vary, obviously. And that was kind of the whole point about actual real federalism, was that if you didn't like living in one state, you could always move to another one that technically had some, like greater levels of liberty. So that way the states could compete with each other for people to live in their states because they, you know, one would have more liberty than the next one or something to that effect. So again, the states could compete with each other, kind of like a quasi-free market thing, not exactly, but that was kind of the intention. And it's funny, too, that you see people trying to do a version of that thing now. Like, for example, Voice, remember the Free State Project that the libertarians were doing?
No. I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I have no clue.
Okay. Well, okay. Here's the several-second version of it, especially for you guys listening that don't know what the Free State Project is. Basically, a bunch of libertarians decided to go to New Hampshire to, as part of a political migration project, in order to populate certain voting districts in such a way that they would form a kind of sort of a majority of sorts and hopefully vote in people as agents of the state to actually do the proper minarchist thing and have a limited government and stuff like that, at least in New Hampshire. Of course, here's the problem. You know, guess what happened with the Free State Project? You know, failed. It didn't work. Now, that's in what its original purpose was, which was all about voting, and of course, well, that's a subject for its own time, but obviously doesn't work. But notice what else happened. You had lots of community building type stuff going on. You had lots of other activity going on. It's kind of a it's not quite an agora, but it was Free State Project was kind of getting there. And it's interesting, a more updated, I think more realistic version of an improvement upon the Free State Project was James Wesley Rawls's concept of the American readout. And for those of you that are listening, if you want to read about the American readout, take that lovely cursor of yours and type in survivalblog.com. And on the left-hand side, there should be a dedicated article called The American Readout. But, it's just, people are seriously considering as a political tactic, basically moving from one state to another that has more liberty in it. So, for example, if you're living in California, maybe you should go to Wyoming. If you're in New York State, maybe you should go to Virginia. If you're in Florida, maybe you should go to Alabama. Maybe. Well, it is Alabama. But the idea is where you're basically moving from one to another, if at all possible. And
wait, this was the thing talking about how the they were telling people that if you don't like the area you live in, just move.
No. The idea behind both the Free State Project and the American Readout Voice was that if you want to have a little bit more liberty, technically you should move to these other places. Like in the one case, New Hampshire, and the other ones, it was like a general area of like Montana, parts of Idaho, and like a couple other things. Like kind of like the Northwest mainly. But yeah, and again, it's also known as voting with your feet. But again, that all kind of plays into the idea of political migration. And and kind of bringing it back to what we kind of started off this broadcast with, people will engage in political migration projects in order to pay less taxes. Or, sometimes they can do that. There's also sales tax, death tax, gift tax, getting your first child born tax. Actually, there probably is a version of that. But, it's all horrid. And, none of this stuff is voluntary. Here's the funny thing. If we really are to have consent with the government and that kind of thing, it would make sense that if government is consensual, then technically, you could have people voluntarily donating to it, just like you would to a friggin' charity. That's the other thing, too. Also, guys, go to Wikipedia. Type in non-tax revenue. It's like in the section on public finance or something like that. If you find the right page, what you should find is this entire list of stuff that can actually support the government that does not come from taxes at all, but it still enables the government to live. Because, Voice, you've heard of this this typical argument, right? That, if we don't have taxes, how will the government fund itself? Remember that?
Wait, sorry, say that one more time. I was reading the chat room.
Remember the typical argument that, if we don't have taxes, how is the government able to fund itself?
I don't know. Ask the Founding Fathers how they did it in the beginning. The government seemed to run pretty fine back then, didn't it? The government ran pretty good up until right around the 30s. Everything seemed fine, right? Other than, civil rights and all that stuff, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, there's always going to be various problems, and those can be solved and what have you. And I'm also going to post into the chats, excuse the typing, just one second. but there is various sources of non-tax revenue. So this lie that we must have taxes in order to support the state is totally not true. And let me just read a few of these. You know, you can get like loans or revenues from selling state assets, rents, concessions, and royalties, fines, fees, user fees, grants, donations. In fact, in a lot of ways, this list that's available on Wikipedia, the article is titled Non-Tax Revenue. Technically, you can boil a lot of these down to basically three different major mediums, which are that the government can be supported by investment dividends. So they invest in something like a shareholder would, and they just get paid the dividends, just like a private individual or anybody else. So investment dividends. Another major source are what I like to call the nationalized businesses. So anything that runs the power grid, water, that kind of thing. That can support the state in a big way. You can totally fund the government from that. And in fact, of what you couldn't fund from the government, well, maybe they shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Exactly.
Okay, that'll help keep it limited and, you know, typical minarchist thing, and that way you can actually bring the republic back by keeping it limited and what have you. So again, the nationalized businesses. The third major area is, like I mentioned a moment ago, voluntary contributions. People literally throwing money at the government, saying, please take it, I like you. I like the services you provide. I am going to give you $100. $100. I'm going to throw a Benjamin at you. And guess what? There are people, believe it or not, that actually voluntarily donate to the state, like as the same way they donate to like a homeless guy on the street. And frankly, if we're going to be honest, if the republic's going to be brought back into style, so to speak, people's attitude toward the state should really be really much more like looking at a homeless guy. That, oh, it deserves pity. We'll throw a little bit of money at it so it doesn't starve to death. I mean, that would be the proper minarchist view on how to really bring back the night watchman state. That's how you do it. It's like this poor, pitiful thing. Not this awesome, huge, you know, figure in, you know, the death mask and the, you know, Ninja Turtle suit outfits and nightsticks and chemical weapons and LRAD cannons and the rest of it. No. Basically supposed to be this pathetic, weak little guy who has like a club or something. I'm speaking metaphorically here, but that's kind of the whole point. You're supposed to like take pity, I'm just saying. So, it's provable you can run a government from non-tax revenue. Again, combination of nationalized businesses, investment dividends, and voluntary donations, just like you would do with a homeless person. You don't need taxes. In fact, G. Edward Griffin, in his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve, which is available from Amazon.com, good book, by the way. You know, he even puts in the what I think is the best proof in there about that taxes, in a lot of ways, the government doesn't need taxes. They use it as a form of social engineering. So when the IRS or whomever it is, whatever organ of the government you're dealing with, whether at the federal level, state level, whatever, is forcibly stealing your wealth, which is what taxation is, when they forcibly steal a portion of your wealth, they don't even need it. They use it as a way to deliberately control the populace and to limit your options in terms of living a better quality life or possibly resisting tyranny or much of anything else for that matter. They admit it. That's kind of a big deal. Oh, no, we can't focus on that. We need to, you know, next time there's Black Friday, we need to line up outside Walmart, and then as soon as the door's open, we need to trample over each other. Because that's the American way. Dude, America was largely started. I mean, a lot of other things were happening too, but one of the big things that started was basically a tax revolt. Do you think the mainline public that comprises most of the American populace is in the mood for a tax revolt like the colonists in the late 18th century? Do you really think that? consider how soft we've all become. You know, we wake up in the morning. And then we, you know, go in our car and we sit. You know, we sit at home too. And we commute to work and we're sitting in traffic. Then we go to work and we sit down doing our sedentary job. At least a lot of us do. We go back in our car, commute back home, and we sit. And we go back at home and sit somewhere watching TV, and then we're lying down. If you look at people even 100 years ago, a century ago, technically 2 centuries if you really want to push it, but let's just say a century ago, in a lot of ways, they were much like it's kind of amazing how much running and jumping and riding and physical labor was involved. We're not even getting into like combat, which is very physically strenuous, but just like normal day-to-day-out stuff. You have to imagine just how much like rawhide the American public used to be. But no, you've got to go on Twitter. You've got to go play around with your iPhone. You've got to like be lazy, basically. And to be perfectly honest, I've got some of those tendencies too, and I've been really working hard on not doing that. You know, I've been having a bit of a tough time sticking to that rule of mine of not watching more than 1 hour of television a day. Sometimes I watch two. Not good. I'm trying to have the self-discipline to only watch an hour or less of TV per day, or technically one movie per day. Because, look, I mean, look at the figures. I mean, people watch like 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of TV a day easily, whatever it is. I've done that too in the past. It's not good. Like I mentioned in the my predictive programming blog post, which you can go to Last Bastille blog at thelastbastille.wordpress.com, go in the search field, type in predictive programming. TV screws with your head, literally, by putting you in a dream state. Literally, provably, the science proves it. And it's just, so, I mean, you know, you want your freedom, you want your liberty. Well, you know, I do too. Anybody with two brain cells to rub together wants their liberty as well. But part of it means getting off your duff and working. Now, it's true. Right now, I'm sitting in my chair talking to all of you. Nothing really necessarily wrong with that. The point is, I shouldn't be doing this like all day, and I don't. But this is stuff you have to consider. You know, it takes work to flex your liberties, so to speak. It takes work to have a good quality of life. It takes work to have happiness, if you want to think of it that way.
Don't forget to flex your rights, too.
But yeah, it takes work. And, you know, Gary Hunt in the chat room is right. Speaking up against the government will not do shit. And to add a caveat to that, I would say speaking up by itself won't do shit. That is definitely true. I mean, we've seen the alternative media. How many years now, boys? How long has the alternative media existed for?
Let's see here. Da, 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 da,
da. 20 years?
Alternative media?
Yeah,
I'm saying alternative media. Yeah, roughly 2020. Well, no, you can go way back when, go to the fax machines, how they used to do it back then.
Okay, they weren't that far back. Public
TV. Well, I mean, that's...
Let's just say 30 as a ballpark. Gary can correct us when we're wrong. And by the way, that's an in-joke because Gary was very famous back in the 90s for using fax machines.
glad you got that.
Okay, yeah, I know. So let's say 30 years is a ballpark figure. Okay. Where's it gotten us? You know, the state still continues to grow stronger. The globalists are having one hell of a good time because they're winning the entire time. Winning! And, you know, we're still stuck. You know, the bailouts happened. Well, 9/11 happened. The bailouts happened after that. Things are still going the same way. And so far, what resistance is there? We have a bunch of people going around and giving speeches. We have a bunch of people getting on the internet and writing stuff, shooting videos, and yakking at you. And Gary Hunt is right again. He says, you may put your foot down, but if you don't pick up your rifle and use it, you won't gain a thing. Well, yeah. And
he's writing it too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, but again, I mean, you can't just go off and do stuff by yourself. Necessarily, I mean, you have to do this properly, you have to organize people, all that, and that's where everything is stuck right now. People have heard me time and time again, I'm sick of talking about it, which is why I try not to do it so much anymore. but about the internal problems, basically. And that is what's preventing people from organizing. And it's still, I mean, my God, even back on April 8th, earlier this month, the Death of the Patriot Unity Coalition episode, I mean, it's just like, there was like, all, like in this very chat room, a bunch of people came from nowhere who are not normal listeners of YHTOM, who are very hostile because they've got their own agenda, or they're doing their useful idiot stuff, or possibly even controlled opposition. Who knows at this point? And they just want to bicker. They don't want to actually collaboratively work with people to solve problems. And until such time that happens, we're going to be stuck in this same thing. Like Randy likes to mention off and on about the elderly lady who was interviewed way back when, and she said herself that, you know, she's been doing this for like 60 years or some insane kind of time frame, and the reason nothing moves forward is because people won't work together because they're infighting all the time. So basically you have a bunch of civilian types, and I mean that in the worst possible sense. You have a bunch of civilian types who would prefer to bicker with each other instead of actually working together collaboratively in a constructive manner and actually organize to resist the enemy. I mean, look at World War II. I mean, were the Norwegians bickering at each other online or bickering even offline? Well, they didn't have the internet back then, but... And, okay, there would be minor tips. Okay, there are minor tips that happen all the time, but I'm saying... Was it to such the extent we've got now where things literally just fall apart and break apart, online and offline? Would that happen to such the extent that things just fall – like, okay, look, they were still able to, you know, do their – which is now referred to as the info warrior stuff. They were still able to conduct active operations against the enemy. They were still able to move things forward.
Here's the thing. I just thought of this. This is kind of the perfect way of explaining this as to the reason why nothing's really changed. Things are real shitty now. We all agree on that. Things suck. Our government is doing really bad things, period, right? We can all agree on that.
They're very bad men.
They're doing very bad things with our rights. They're doing terrible things.
Anyway. And they will not respect our authority.
They will not respect our authority. And they're going to keep on doing these terrible bad things until we end up getting pissed off, get fed up, and decide to actually do something about it. Because like Gary said, he's right. Bitching about the government is not going to do anything. We can bitch all day long about what the government is doing. If we're not doing anything to stop it, then we're not doing any good. Really. Now, here's the problem behind that is. People as a whole have been conditioned by their lifestyle nowadays and don't want to do things about it because, just like Kelly had said, they want the perfect leader to run the resistance or the revolution or whatever.
Oh, good gosh, don't get me started on the messianic figures.
Because our conditioning of the way of life, we get up, go to work, come home, take care of our family, spend time with our family and friends, you know, watch TV for 5 hours, go to bed, do it all over. Monday to Sunday, we do the same thing over and over. And sometimes people on the weekends have time off. Fine. Okay. But what do we do with all our time half the time? We sit down and we waste it getting drunk, doing this, partying, this and that, and this and that, and so forth and so on. Instead of being constructive and trying to come up with a plan to do anything. I think the reason why no one's really stood up and done anything huge yet is because of the conditioning of the way of life of individuals.
Yeah, they're too comfortable.
Exactly. So until people can break off of that and get their head out of their ass and rely on themselves and stop holding the fucking government's hand and actually think for a second and make decisions for themselves, we might be a little bit better off.
Right. And that's the other thing, too. I mentioned about, like, becoming more, like, rawhide, if at all possible. And I think that should definitely be pursued by, you know, as many people who are, you know, willing to voluntarily do that. I think that would very much help. You know, you can't go resist the enemy in any real effective manner if you're, like, a slovenly, fat civilian type. I'm just saying, I mean, and I don't mean that literally, per se. I mean that more metaphorically. You know, if you're complacent, if you acquiesce to what the establishment is doing, if you give your tacit consent, then you're basically, by default, agreeing to all of this. The police brutality, the imperialistic wars of aggression, the fractional reserve lending, all of it.
It's like damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, you got two realistic options, I think, personally. And if you don't mind me taking a minute, I mean, really.
Please do.
You've got two realistic options. One, we can get behind it, and one option is going to take an obscene amount of time. I'm talking years and years and years and years, hundreds of years for this to work. It would be going through the steps of getting people taken out of, you know, impeachment processes, this and that, suing the government for this, that, so forth and so on, and doing it without having any violence, per se, behind it, okay? There's that way, okay? That is the long, ridiculously long way to do it. The other way would be to quite literally stand up, march up to D.C. and be like, hey, you know what? We're going to just take this back. So, but the problem with that is you still have to organize, get behind it, create a new government as a whole before you can even go do that. Because you can't walk up there and be like, all right, we're going to take over, and then we take over, and then what? Then there's nothing. There's no more government, so then there's no more laws, so then there's nothing else going on. So then what happens? It's complete anarchy, destruction, and everything else.
Well, hold on. Just to be fair, I think what you're meaning is the disorder, the chaos. Well, if you think about it, the state is very chaotic. I mean, we don't know. I mean, are you going to get pulled over by a cop tomorrow and be beaten senseless? That sounds very chaotic to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Gary, I like what you said there. You can't unite until the time comes to unite. By stand behind, it means don't be critical if someone blows up the Murrah building.
I love that.
Because we had a conversation about that, and you know what that was about. so, that's awesome. That makes perfect sense.
Well, I think really the more important thing, though, is to really kind of get past this mental block that a lot of people have. Even people in alternative media, most of them I've noticed, because when it comes to legal and illegal, like, they start getting into a whole conniption fit. Well, what about lawful and unlawful? Or how about just plain right and wrong?
How about, I mean, unconstitutional and constitutional? Let's get back to the very basics.
Sure. We can do that, too, as well. I mean, well, technically anything that's unconstitutional is technically illegal anyway, but, you know, that's kind of a finer point. But if you want to make it super, 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 super basic, how about right and wrong?
True.
If I come over and punch you in the nose, even if it's legal, does that make it right?
No, because I'm going to kick your ass.
Well, okay. There's the issues of, like, self-defense and all that, but in that case, I initiated the act of violence against you by punching you in the nose for no reason.
Right.
Right, and that's immoral. So, I mean, it's like... No, we can't do that. And it's been funny. You know, it's been known since at least the 90s that, and so far the trend has been proven true, that the sphere of allowed human activity has shrunken and shrunken and shrunken much more so. A lot more things are being criminalized. For example, it's also been mentioned that what was used to be considered a misdemeanor with certain types of things is now a felony now. So there's been this tightening and tightening down on the sphere of allowed or legal human activity. What do you think is going to happen when you're putting the clinches on a population like that? Of course they're going to flip out and do crazy shit, or they're going to be desperate or whatever the case is. Of course that's going to happen. And ironically, it's a bunch of criminals making up these so-called laws, which are really statutes, but, you know, whatever. So it's just like, wow. And mentioning also in the chat room, yes, kind of like I mentioned a little bit earlier, too. Yes, there is the plan for the restoration of constitutional government. It will only take 1 to 5 people to get the ball rolling, but only if we are willing to stand behind them. Right, and
if you actually go on that website and read what is posted there and read it in its entirety, it makes sense. It really, really does.
Right, and this is the plan for the restoration of constitutional government, like I said earlier, is the best plan I have read as of this time. And, you know, if anybody else comes up with a plan for a different thing for the Republic, or hell, I mean, how about guys of a completely different political orientation? I would love to see the proprietarian anarchists come up with a written down plan for how to manifest the stateless society, also known as like the libertarian revolution or whatever. I would love to see that. oh, wait a minute. So what they will do is they'll write books about how it theoretically could work, but not an actual plan. I find that interesting. So it may suggest just how serious some types of political dissidents are versus other ones. You know, how many of them are willing to put pen to paper and say, hey, look, here's a plan. Here's where we are, here's where we want to be, and here's what, and the rest of it, the whole meat of the potatoes of this piece of text, is how to go from where we are to where we want to be. It just kind of makes sense. I mean, again, if you are an entrepreneur and you're running your own small business, you also have to have, what's that called? A business plan. Same thing. Revolution, counter-revolution, a renaissance, a restoration, whatever you want to use, necessarily need plans. I mean, the bad guy, like we mentioned earlier, the bad guys plan all the time and have secret meetings with their plans and all that. Why can't the good guys have normal meetings and do basic plans? And some good guys in some areas do that, to their credit, but the point is that it's not normal yet. That's kind of the problem. You know, I mean, I don't mean to make this sound wrong or whatever, but there are some things you can learn from your enemy, and then you can adapt certain tactics and techniques and use it for good purposes. Like another thing, just as a quick tangent, you know, the enemy always goes after the children with the public schools and whatever. So maybe, like I mentioned on homeschooling
for the elderly,
right? So like I mentioned on the homeschooling for dissidents episode, you know, maybe you should start homeschooling your children. You ever think of that? Guys, go back in the YHTOM archives and go listen to Homeschooling for Dissidents for more information on that. But, you know, there are things we can do. And so for this particular broadcast, you know, we mentioned a bunch of things, obviously. We mentioned about taxation. We've mentioned about, you know, agents of the state running around doing stuff and probably, hopefully, a lot of them quitting at some point in the future, which would be really nice. Probably not going to happen, though, but, you know, we can dream, right?
Right.
Well, let's look at something we can start doing now. And it's interesting, speaking of the proprietarian anarchist, you know, I've had several conversations with several different ones about this, and it's interesting because they're saying that I'm already practicing this already, so this is kind of interesting. So let's go to the problem-solving side. Ostracism. Don't fraternize with the enemy. Don't have a beer with them. Don't spend – I mean, now, if you have to, like, do business with them for, like, commerce or whatever, you know, it would be preferable if you didn't do that, but, you know, whatever. But I think that – at least in, like, a social situations, I think it would be best to at least try and do something along those lines. To at least, you know, don't go having a beer with them. Don't be unusually nice to them. Don't treat them like your friends. I mean, if these people want to hurt you, why would you be friends with them? That makes no sense. Even Major H. von Donk, in his book Total Resistance, A Swiss Army Guide to Guerrilla Warfare and Underground Operations, you know, there's a section there about passive resistance. And literally, like, he'll say stuff like, and obviously what I'm about to say, I don't intend on copyright infringement. And also, I should have said this at the beginning of the broadcast, everything that's mentioned on this broadcast is done under the sincere intention of fair use. But, like, for example, in this book Total Resistance, for example, do not take a place in the same train compartment as the enemy, but rather stand in the aisle. If necessary, change cars. Or another scenario, if only a few pedestrians are on the street, leave the sidewalk and go to the opposite side where a member of the occupation forces approaches. You can even enter a stairwell of a house for a minute. This technique is, of course, only practical when not too many people are on the street and your behavior will be noticed. If your enemy is waiting at a train station, streetcar station, in front of the movie or at the theater, step back so that a large circle will form in the midst of the waiting crowd. This will make him realize that moral isolation to which he is subjected. For the women folk, when you are asked to dance by members of the occupation forces, that's the enemy, or by their collaborators, refuse, under the pretext of being tired, having no desire to dance, or being ill. And those are just some very, very brief examples that's in that book, Total Resistance, Swiss Army Guide to Guerrilla Warfare and Underground Operations by Major H. von Donk. There are things you can do now to not fraternize with the enemy. So, I mean, there are things we can do, guys. You know, who says that one of your friends has to be a cop? Well, maybe while he's still a cop, maybe you shouldn't hang out with him anymore. And if he asks you why, maybe say, I'm just uncomfortable with your profession. And maybe you can start a conversation there. Maybe roles remind him he's supposed to be a peace officer. And even if he wants to be a peace officer, maybe tell him that being part of some sort of despotic police department wherever you live is not the way to be a peace officer. You know, there are things that can be done. You know, just saying. I mean, what do you think about that voice, about not fraternizing with agents of the state, with people whose income is literally derived from other people's stolen wealth? What do you think about that? Okay, hey, voice, you there, man?
Sorry, dude, I had the mic muted, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. So what do you think about that, about not fraternizing with agents of the state, since their incomes are derived from the stolen from other people's stolen wealth?
I tend to stay away from it unless it's somebody I know. And even when it's somebody I know, I still tend to stay away from certain topics.
So you're censoring yourself, basically.
Yes. especially, a buddy of mine had a bad run-in with a police officer one time. And who he thought was who to be his friend, and said some stuff about how the government this and the government that, and needless to say, the cop was really pissed and ended up pulling him over for everything that was wrong with his truck, and he got a bunch of tickets and stuff left and right. And, you know, little things like that, you know what I mean? Where, you know, the cop could legally do what he should have done, but because he knew the guy, he let it go, you know what I mean? I have a couple people I know that are like that I just refuse to bring up topics like that. And even people who don't understand stuff like this, I tend to stay away from, because 9 times out of 10 they don't get it.
Well, voice, I mean, have you ever considered not associating with those guys who work for the government?
Yes. Most definitely.
Okay, and how has it worked so far?
Pretty good so far, avoiding them, yeah. Completely not talking to them? Yeah, it works great.
Okay, so you've actually tried non-fraternization then, and so have things been better for you since you have started?
Yes. Yes and no. There are people that you think are okay, but then can turn around like that and completely screw you over. It happens. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It happens, but, you know.
Okay. Gary Hunt in the chat does make the comment that if a cop wants a promotion, do you think he won't turn against you, the them or us mentality?
He'll turn against you in a minute.
Right. I was just basically saying that, you know, if he wants to be a proper peace officer, it would be better if he just wasn't a cop in the first place, to just go do something else. Go be there's lots of other jobs, private security jobs. I mean, you can go be a bodyguard. They call them now executive protection specialists, but they're bodyguards. You can be a bodyguard. You can go be a security guard. There's lots and lots of jobs and whatever. And, you know, that's the other thing, too, is that, I mean, how do you deal with the police? And I would, at this juncture, I would just say avoid them. I'm not saying you have to be afraid. That's not the same thing. What I am saying is you don't go out of your way and go be all buddy-buddy. Now, some people would take issue with that and say, well, we need to appeal to the county sheriffs and whatever. I'm like, well, look, if you want to do that, you know, again, it's your life. I'm not gonna pretend I'm gonna be your parent or the nanny state and dictate to you what you should do. But you know, as a fellow, you know, human being, citizen, whatever, I would humbly submit for your suggestion that that's kind of silly for one very simple reason, that anything you say in front of a cop can and will be used against you in a court of, or in a government court, basically. So, it's cops can lie to you. It's just, and the other agents of the state, bureaucrats, judges, legislators, I think what we're kind of getting at is the government your friend? And judging from their, behavior, I don't think the government's my friend. I don't think it's your friend. I sure as hell not Voice's friend. Hey, Voice, is the government your friend?
Is the government my friend?
Yes.
The government. The United States government. I mean, the same government that's trying to hold my hand and tell me what's right and wrong, what's politically correct and incorrect? Let me think about that. No. I don't like them. No.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, what else can you say? I mean, it's just sad. That is what it is. So what we do know is that some level of ostracism works, at least for your own individual lives. You can make it a little bit better. And, you know, if you don't have some cops, opportunistic cops sniff around, that's all the better, too. But even if it's not that, let's say somebody, you know, somebody that's a bureaucrat, a paper pusher type. What's he doing all day? I mean, that's not exactly great virtuous behavior either. I mean, hell, arguably being a prostitute is being more virtuous than being a bureaucrat. At least she's doing work. Just consider that. I mean, what do you think, Voice?
Of
certain types of professions that may not exactly leave a good taste in the mouth, but technically actually does provide a very valuable service, and therefore is much more valuable than any sort of bureaucratic job.
Teachers.
Oh!
I feel so bad for teachers.
Oh, you know what? If the free market could actually work, there would be so many good teachers out that could compete against the public fool crappy guys. It would be just sick. Because really, those teachers, especially those teachers unions, oh my goodness, they're just another oligopoly protected by the government. Again, it's just over and over and over. It's like whatever industry you're looking at, it's like government protection. Goodness sakes, I was watching another video, and yes, Gary, I know you did post earlier in the chat room about it because YouTube said so. Great article, by the way. Everyone should go read that at outpost-of-freedom.com. Great article because YouTube said so. And as a videographer, I can appreciate the concerns that are definitely in there because it very much is easy to edit stuff out. But, yeah, I mean, I was just watching a video the other day about how sugar as a commodity had its own kind of oligopoly of sorts with government protection and everything else. I mean, sugar, come on. So, all right, so we did bitch about taxes. Come on, it's tax day. Give us a break.
Tax day.
Taxes are not fun.
No.
We work for yeah. And ironically, you know, what the IRS wants are Federal Reserve notes anyway.
Yeah, how's that? I don't understand that. How the Federal Reserve wants you to pay taxes on money that has been completely that's worthless, almost. I don't understand why they want the money that they created in the beginning to come back to them.
I have this weird feeling that I have this feeling, though, that organ of the enemy is supposed to be illogical. I don't know. I think the Federal Reserve, in a lot of ways, practices doublethink. I mean, again, look at 19. I don't usually like citing fictional novels, but look at 1984. A lot of things that. Actually, look at the different
government. Rex 84.
Well, that was something that was real, but anyway. But in that.
Hey, that was real. That happened.
Well, in that fictional novel, though, look at the different government organs. The Ministry of Truth is nothing but propaganda and lies, and I mean propaganda in the negative sense.
There's a Ministry of Truth?
Yeah, Ministry of Truth. There was also the Ministry of Love, where people, that's basically a prison. People get tortured there. So whatever it was, the Ministry of Blah, whatever that blah was something totally contradictory to what that actual, what that ministry actually does and all that's about. So, and yeah, guys, I know I kind of went on there for a bit. Apparently the chat room is really going to kind of blazing. All you guys are really cool, and I try and get everybody read as much as possible, especially if it has to do with the actual content that we're going through right now. But yeah, I mean, okay, so we may not be able, I think here's probably the big point of this particular broadcast, even if we're not able to stop paying taxes as of like this upcoming fiscal year for the next cycle, what can be done is you can not have any friends, family, or whatever that works for the government. See, because that's actually achievable. You can ostracize people you know who work for the government or who otherwise benefit from the government. So the income tax thing, okay, there are some possibilities there, and some of those avenues should be explored. Again, show me the law. But let's also consider, let's do, again, voice. You know why there's that weightlifting example?
We don't know.
Well, if you know that a guy can lift 100 pounds, you know he can lift 20. However, if you have a different guy who can lift only 20 pounds, that doesn't mean he can necessarily lift 100, because all you know is he can lift 20. Same thing here. If you want to do, like, avoiding the income tax or whatever, that's kind of like lifting 100 pounds or 150, depending on how you want to look at it metaphorically. So why not, let's start with doing something that's more like 20 pounds. Don't associate with agents of the state. Don't have friends or family as much as possible. And for some of you, this is going to be hard. And obviously for your own life, too, don't you work for the government. Please don't. Don't associate with a judge, a legislator, a bureaucrat, or a police officer on your own free time. Again, if you have to do business with them or something for terms of commerce or for your or whatever, just consider the ramifications of it. But otherwise, like in a social setting, no, not at all. Don't condone these people. Don't condone their lifestyle. Don't condone that the only reason they even manage to exist is because they exist on the proceeds of other people's stolen wealth. Again, that's kind of like a really hard and fast thing that you can't really ignore. And by the way, as a side note, before anybody comes up with some stupid rebuttal to that, not everybody on welfare is bad.
No, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean it like that. But
some people on welfare
that's why I said
are just desperate and a lot of times have to apply for welfare because they used to be one of those taxpayers who constantly had their wealth stolen. But some of those people, it was stolen to such a degree that they had to become welfare recipients because all their money was stolen.
Right, but that's why I said the people that are living on it for 10 plus years that refuse to get off of it.
Right, right. And thank you, Evenhand, in the chat room. Yes, please visit www.showmethelaw.net. Yeah, exactly. Show me the law. I'd like to know it. And you know what? The IRS will never, or have, at least not to this point, ever proven it. You know, it's funny. Some people like to cite the 16th Amendment. Or there was actually a CPA I talked to once a couple years back who mentioned that, oh, well, it's also in the IRS regulations some, you know, bumfuck place where citizens are required to file an individual federal income tax return. I'm like, wait a minute, you're talking about rulemaking, right? Their own regulations? Like, yeah, rulemaking. So, wait a minute, we have an administrative agency. You're telling me that administrative agency just arbitrarily, just asserts, you know, even for those people who want democracy, fallacious notion that is, this isn't even democratic, even on that standard. This is just total dictatorial crap. And Congress lets it happen. You know, they're neglectful in their duty on providing congressional oversight over the bureaucracy, the administrative agencies. So you have one organ of the government that's running around doing all this crap, and then you have a different one neglecting its proper role in limiting or I guess you could say regulating, but I mean kind of like a well-regulated militia, kind of more in that sense. But let's just say limiting that particular entity's abilities. So again, guys, so on the problem-solving stuff for tonight, let this be your homework assignment for the week, okay? All listeners, you've got a homework assignment for the week. Your homework assignment is to ostracize or otherwise cease to fraternize with one individual that you happen to know, assuming there is one that you know, that is an agent of the state, a legislator, a judge, a police officer, or a bureaucrat. If you happen to know somebody who is a friend, maybe even family if you want to push it that far, stop dealing with them at least on a social basis and professionally, like in terms of financially, if at all possible. But let's start small and do it at least socially. And that's your guys' homework assignment for the week. Stop fraternizing with the enemy. Stop it. If you want more details on how to do that, you know, listen to this podcast again, the H. Von Donk book and various others, and, you know, take a look at that kind of stuff, too. You know, you guys have options. You know, none of this is, you know, totally set in stone at all. You still have options. So, Voice, I mean, what do you think, man?
I don't know. I've got a lot running through my head right now because I've been talking to people with the chat and everything else too. But today's tax day. Yeah, try to avoid people of the state. some people you're going to run into and not like. You might say one wrong thing and that lead to something else that might get you in trouble because it happens. Like look at the kid from, I think it was Arizona, the 16-year-old kid that's been missing now for like weeks. They accused him of being a terrorist and they've got him holed up in some federal prison somewhere. Yeah.
Right, right. And also as a quick addendum, for those of you guys that already don't associate with any agents of the state, try and help a friend of your, this is an alternate homework assignment, try and help a friend of yours, presumably who does associate with somebody, to not fraternize with them. And even if, like, nobody you know, even if you happen to be one of those very lucky people where all of your friends and all of your family, they themselves don't or associate with anybody who's an agent of the government or whatever, I would say gather together and have a house party and all slap yourselves on the back for basically being free, independent people as much as possible. That's what I would say. So for those of you guys who already did your work that way, you know, have a house party. For the rest of you, you've got a homework assignment to ostracize or otherwise not fraternize with people who benefit from the initiation of the use of violence against you and your family personally and other people's families too. So just consider that. Now, as we begin to close out tonight, I do want to do a quick pitch of sorts. Obviously, as you guys know, there is Dr. Joseph P. Martino's book, Resistance to Tyranny, a Primer, which you can buy directly from, I believe it's uftrademy.com. Go to the page that says Resistance to Tyranny, and I think it's on the left-hand side. It says Buy Now. Click it, and it'll take you to PayPal. And it's currently available for, I think it's $17.95 or so. And there's pretty much two places where you can get the book. As far as I'm aware of, you can buy it from Amazon or you can buy it from the lovely folks here at YHTOM. And since we're the good guys, or at least try to be, we would really appreciate your support and that sort of thing. Because, none of this stuff comes cheap. And frankly, it's kind of risky for any of us to be doing this kind of stuff anyway, because it's not safe to be a political dissident in America anymore. Also, it's brought to my attention that Scary Carry on Truth Finders Network tomorrow night is having a broadcast at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So for those of you who are interested in that kind of material, tune in to TFN at truthfindersnetwork.com, I believe it is, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And also, please support us here at YHTOM, uftrademy.com, by buying a copy of at least one copy of Joseph P. Martino's book, because you know what? If you can actually buy more copies and like give them to your friends, so like people can like start thinking about how resistance actually works, then you know all the better. And for those of you that don't know about Dr. Martino, Dr. Joseph P. Martino is a retired Air Force colonel. He served in Thailand, where he conducted research on counterinsurgency. He later was chairman of the Counterinsurgency Working Group of the Military Operations Research Society. He teaches a course in Just War Doctrine at Yorktown University. He holds degrees in physics, electrical engineering, and mathematics. So basically, you know, he's a smart dude. So, Voice, what are your thoughts here on the various topics we discussed tonight?
It was good. I think we had a pretty good conversation about what was going on, included what was said in the chat room and everything else. So, I mean, it was pretty good.
Okay, well, guys, I think it would be time to pretty much kind of close it down for the night. And as Randy Mack has always said as his cue for closing out, be safe, be free, take care. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, the British are coming! The British are coming!
Now the ride of Paul Revere set the nation on its ear, and the shot at Lexington heard round the world. When the British fired in the early dawn, the War of Independence had begun. The die was cast, the rebel flag unfurled. And on to Concord marched the foe, to seize the arsenal, there you know, waking folks and searching all around. So our militia stopped them in their tracks. At the old North Bridge we turned them back, and chased those redcoats back to Boston town.
Now the shot heard round the world, was the start of the revolution. The Minutemen were ready on the move. Take your powder, take your guns, report to General Washington. Hurry, men, there's not an hour to lose.
Now famous Bunker Hill, even though we had lost, it was quite a thrill. The rebel colonel for Epcot Pooty was wise. Outnumbered and low on ammunition, as the British stormed his position, he said, hold your fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Though the next few years were rough, General Washington's men seemed they were tough. Those hungry, ragged boys would not